Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Fantasy Foot Beer Podcast. I'm James Kemp, joined as always by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Michael Dr. Stu Stewart. Stu, what's up, buddy?
Oh, not much, James. Thank you for asking. I'm doing quite well. Better than well, actually, if you really think about it. Just a peek behind the curtain at Fantasy Foot Beer. I mentioned in the last episode that I will be gone in a week, so this is a week later. How am I still talking to you? I'm not in Canada right now. I'm not yelling from across the country. Anyway, we're just recording back to back. So I'm already a drink or two into the evening. This will be fun. We're going to talk football. James, I want to know how you are doing, if it's at any different from 40 minutes ago when I last asked you.
I am doing, you know, about the same. The only difference is now I'm drinking beer. I'm drinking the beer that I talked about in the last episode. How cool is that? But I thought I would have more to say. Here's something. Right now, if you are listening to this, we've moved into the future. You listening to this, the listener, right now, there is football this week. The Hall of Fame game is only 2 days away from the point when this episode will air. So everybody, let's give ourselves a round of applause. Clap it up. Football is back. Let's go.
It took forever, but it's back now.
It is the Hall of Fame game, so you're probably going to watch like the first drive and then be like, oh yeah, this preseason football sucks. And you're right. Preseason football does suck. It gets you excited for football to be back. And then you're like, okay, it's still not back. Got to wait 3 more weeks. But then it'll be back.
It'll be back.
Yeah. But we got a good show planned for you all today. We're going to talk about possibly the most contentious division in football. Not controversy. Well, maybe the most controversy surrounding mostly one team. But we are going to talk about the top half of the AFC West. We're going to be talking about the Chiefs and the Broncos. But, I don't think there is a but here.
There's not really news. Yeah, there's not really a but. Like, any news that's going to come out, you'll probably just announce on our socials. But the thing is, James, what are our socials?
Our socials, we are available at Fantasy Foot Beer on Instagram, at X. You can send us beer recommendations to our Gmail account. It's fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com. Also, if you are interested in seeing some live fantasy football presenting, talking, conversationing, I'm giving a presentation on August 7th at the Sturdy Shelter Brewery in Batavia, Illinois. If you are available that evening, come on out. Come talk fantasy foot beer, fantasy football. Going to be talking about how to maximize your enjoyment in fantasy football. And it's at a brewery. And, you know, we like beer. You like beer. Everybody likes beer. Come get some beer. Fantasy foot beer. But I think we are about ready to get going. Dr. Stu, this is going to be a weird one. I think we feel that, but I guess let's start with Patrick Mahomes. How do you feel about Patty Mahomes?
He's about as close as do not draft as Patrick Mahomes can be for me. He is buoyed in ADP completely by his name alone. He has not been fantasy relevant for at least the last two, probably the last three seasons. And when I say not fantasy relevant, I mean he's not, you know, first overall. Mm-hmm. Like, he's down there in the low QB1s. You drafted him way higher than he is producing for you. And he's still taken higher than he really should be. Like, 4,000 yards last year, that's actually pretty good. 26 touchdowns is not anything to write home about. It's pretty pedestrian. He's losing his, I mean, he's not losing. Travis Kelce is still there, but he's losing slowly his favorite target. And just not losing his target all at once. He's losing Rashee Rice for probably a quarter to a third of the season. I don't like it. I don't like a lot about the Chiefs. I know that they're going to continue to win a bunch of games. They're going to win their division. But it is not going to be reflected in my fantasy leagues. I don't want Patrick Mahomes. If he fell to me and I still didn't have a quarterback and I didn't want to go Jordan Love like I railed about last episode, I would maybe take him. But it's pedestrian value under a brand name, if you follow me there. James, how are you feeling about Patrick Mahomes?
I absolutely am following, and I absolutely agree. Patrick Mahomes, I'm seeing him right now as the QB6, below Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels, Jalen Hurts, and Joe Burrow. I would take him, well, you know, I would take him lower than that, but not a lot lower than that. Like, I would take him below Baker Mayfield. Bo Nix, I'm not sure I would. But, like, there's the top tier of fantasy-relevant quarterbacks, and then there's everybody else. And I'm not sure Patrick Mahomes... Okay, this is what you're talking about, though. It's the label of Patrick Mahomes giving him value. And I'm kind of with the rose-colored glasses people who are like, yeah, but it's Patrick Mahomes. He can do anything. We've heard Chris Collinsworth lose his mind over Patrick Mahomes breathing. That's just the greatness of Patrick Mahomes, you know? But is Patrick Mahomes really bad enough to be a streamer? That's the question that we're asking. Because I feel like if you're not, like, easily in the top half of quarterbacks, and or top half of QB1s, I should say, if you're not easily in the top 8 or 9 guys, I think you're a streamer. And I see Patrick Mahomes being ranked as a mid-tier QB1. I don't think he's that good to be, or not that he's not good, but I don't think he's as good in terms of fantasy to be a QB1, top, but I'm confusing myself, to be in the top half of QB1s. Patrick Mahomes cannot be a streamer, and yet we're going to have to think of him like one to make this make sense. So, I think the mental gymnastics I just put myself through is going to be what we're going to be doing with this entire Chiefs roster. So, I agree with Stu. He's not on my list. I'd like to not have him. Let's talk about a position that has a little bit more nuance. And I think that's the wide receiver position, which is the position that Patrick Mahomes is going to commune with often. I'd like to talk about Rashee Rice. Because last year, legal issues aside, I took a waiver on Rashee Rice, and through the first 3 weeks of the season, it was the best decision I've ever made in fantasy football. Get him mid rounds, pretty sure he wasn't going to get a suspension. It was great. He was sitting at like wide receiver 4, I think, through week 3. And then, this is just the greatness of Patrick Mahomes. He dives headfirst into Rashee Rice's knee, destroys the ACL and the LCL. Rashee Rice out for the season. The entire rest of the year, I was trying to recreate Rashee Rice in the aggregate. I was trying to get every other Chiefs wide receiver I could. I got Juju, I got Xavier Worthy, I got Marquise Brown. Nothing satisfied the way Rashee Rice did. Now,
don't forget D-Hop.
Yeah, and D-Hop. I had D-Hop too. I did forget about D-Hop. Now we have...
Crazy, right?
I can't believe D-Hop was on that team. You barely noticed. He didn't do anything. Rashee Rice. We now see him going into the season as the wide receiver 21. That number is and should be rapidly dropping because of his own... I don't think criminal negligence is the term. Criminal recklessness is the term.
Criminal activity?
Activity. Recklessness. Misdemeanor? recklessness? I don't know. He's got jail time. And he's going to get a suspension. We don't know how long it's going to be. I think the minimum it's allowed to be is 4 games. But we'll see what it ends up being. He's going to get a suspension this year. We don't know when it's going to be. We don't know how long it's going to be. We know the minimum. That's about it. For him to still be listed as a wide receiver too, when we don't know these things, is a red flag for a lot of different things. Maybe it's a red flag for the rankers. The issue isn't the Chiefs, it's the people ranking the Chiefs. Talk about meta here. But I'm much more interested in Xavier Worthy right now than I am in Rashee Rice. Xavier Worthy going into year two, I believe. Xavier Worthy, who stepped into that wide receiver role, wide receiver one role last year, I think he's going to have the ability to build on that, build on his rapport with Patrick Mahomes, and be someone who you are going to enjoy having taken in the fifth or sixth round. I think it's probably going to be closer to the fourth or fifth once all is said and done with these things shaking out. Stu, I just talked for a long time. Sorry, what you got?
No problem at all. I think, honestly, these couple of guys are some of the most interesting topics of conversation on the Chiefs. How do you even value a guy who, in an extremely small sample size, like you said, was taking the fantasy world by storm before getting knocked out for the season? But to get something like that, I mean, is he still going to be that player after such a devastating knee injury? But also, can you hold him for 4 to 6 weeks as a non-IR eligible player? Someone that you took, I mean, currently it's ranked as a wide receiver too, you said. I mean, you're taking him early. That's draft capital that you're investing. You're going to put yourself behind the eight ball for a third of the season for this guy? Like, absolutely not. He needs to fall way further before I even think about taking him. It's got to be far, honestly, for me personally, as someone who needs some level of value from all my positions. And we want to see him on the field, right? Like, he's not even on the field. Anyway, so Rashee Rice notwithstanding, Xavier Worthy becomes extremely attractive. I mean, he got better and better over the season as it went on. He's able to take the ball out of the backfield. He scores touchdowns. He's fast. He is tough to catch in the open field, and that is great for fantasy value because he can break off, you know, a long touchdown on any given opportunity, and that's really, really awesome. He's definitely not going to stay in that flex tier. He would be an extremely strong flex for me right now. He's got to be in the top. Maybe he's probably going at wide receiver 18 to 20 by the time the drafts shake out, and at that point we're getting a little bit rich for a second-year player on the Chiefs, but he's absolutely going to be a great fantasy asset for lots of teams across the season. They're going to have to go to him, and then we're really going to have to see how it shakes out when Rice comes back, because you're going to get a third of the season that's the Xavier Worthy show, and then Rice is going to come back, and we're going to see two players that fit, in my opinion, a fairly similar mold, along with Travis Kelce. Like, the people that are maybe a little bit better in the short and intermediate, maybe the screen game, short intermediate passes. And we got three guys that could do that in Kelce, Worthy, and Rice. So, really, really interesting. I'm excited to see how it's going to shake out. Rice is not going to see my roster ever, probably. But the last person I talked about right there, James, was Travis Kelce, the aged wonder. I really thought he was going to retire last year. If they had won the Super Bowl, I was going to put good money on him proposing marriage to Taylor Swift and then riding off into the sunset. But they got absolutely shellacked in the Super Bowl, so now he has to come back and prove that he's still got it. Does he still have it, though? I mean, he got almost 100 receptions last year as a tight end, but we took him in, what was he going, in like the third or the fourth round last year?
Oh, yeah.
And underperformed that extremely. So now we've seen him drop somewhere in the seventh and eighth rounds, which seems okay, but in such a downward trend, a steep slope of downward production last year, are we projecting that he's going to be another year older, a little bit less productive for us this year? And are we okay with that as a tight end six kind of a week in, week out starter. He's probably the last of the week in, week out starters for me, but he has the potential to be worse. He has the potential to be worse, James. How are you feeling about Travis Kelce?
I think there's something to be said about the fact that the tight end six is a guy who last year had one foot in the grave, as in one foot into retirement. And really, for most of the season last year, looked like he lost his fastball. He did kind of catch up late in the second, well, through the whole second half of the season. Weeks 8, 9, and 10 were all 20-plus weeks for him, 20-plus fantasy points. And he did see weeks of double, well, he only saw double-digit targets six times last year. But five of those six were in the second half of the season. So maybe there's something to be said about just the very long and pronounced Super Bowl hangover that the Chiefs had as a dynasty. We saw this kind of with Gronk a few times, and Kelce will always be compared to Gronk because they're the same age and because they were kind of in the same era where Kelce was seen as this successor, late bloomer. But when we think about what that age is, Travis Kelce is 35, which for football players is ancient. He is able to continue to do the things he does because the tight end position requires a player to be enormous and muscle-bound and be able to be a physical kind of player, and that allows you to have slightly more longevity. However, Travis Kelce does not look like the same player he was. Tight end six, you know, is honestly accurate, but only because of the fact that the tight end position is so depleted at this moment. So I'm seeing Travis Kelce going in the sixth round. I don't want Travis Kelce in the sixth round. I would like to see him in the eighth or ninth, and that will not happen. That absolutely will not happen. So Travis Kelce, I think in the sixth round, there's a lot of better value that I'm going to get there. And I'm going to get probably equal to marginally less value by waiting several more rounds to take a tight end. So, Travis Kelce, I'm sure there's a Taylor Swift pun or joke somewhere in here. I haven't listened to enough Taylor Swift recently to be on that. There's a blank space on my tight end slot, and I'm not writing your name. There it is.
You got there in the end, absolutely. Yeah. Really, really good one. Really finger on the pulse of recent Taylor Swift production.
That was on the new album, right? She's got a new album, right?
I think that song is a good. I think that song is a good decade old.
It's got to be older than a decade old. It's got to be like 15 years at this point.
It was released in 2014, 11
okay.
years ago.
Okay, it just felt older than that.
Well, we got to talk about the rest of the Chiefs, James. Really quickly, we've got the running back stable, Isaiah Pacheco. Pretty much a lost season for him. Dealt with a ton of injuries. Had seven games played, 83 carries. It's almost a complete wash. He's going in the 6th, 7th, 8th, something like that. I only just looked at it, but he's going at RB28 in standard, so an RB3 target, expecting it to be better for him. But the thing about it is that the Chiefs are just, they just love Kareem Hunt, the other guy in there who got the lion's share of the work last year, despite being a little bit older and, you know, has lost a couple steps. And this seems like a gross timeshare to me. This is two guys that are going to be splitting fairly evenly, I would imagine. And for fantasy, that's a death knell for me. I don't want either of these guys, James. I don't know if you feel differently, but the Chiefs might be the best team that I want nothing to do with fantasy-wise.
I think that's a really good assessment. I think Xavier Worthy's probably the only guy on this whole team I want. But
you're right, you're right, yeah.
Pacheco and this entire running back stable is really tough to look at because, like, I don't know if you have this pulled up. If you could guess how old Isaiah Pacheco was, how old would you say?
At current time, I would say he's 26.
And you're exactly right. He's 26.
Whoo! Look at me go.
It feels like, to me, it feels like he's younger than that. But the amount of injuries he's gone through and the amount of production he's gone through seem like they're two different things. It seems like he's had a fair amount of injury history, but moments of flashing brilliance and a lot of moments of flashing irrelevance. Kareem Hunt, obviously he has, I guess you could say, a storied history. Was very successful early in his career with both the Chiefs and the Browns, and now is kind of riding out whatever he can for as long as he can stay in the show. Elijah Mitchell is there. Carson Steele is there. None of this is saying to me workhorse to any of them, and none of this is saying productive timeshare. So exactly what you were saying, not interested at all.
No, definitely not. Xavier Worthy or bust for me.
Yep. The Chiefs do benefit from having a very, very talented defense. In terms of fantasy, rated as a defense 8, and that's really only because they're going to have a tough schedule being so successful last year. But, again, stream your defenses. Look at them week to week. Harrison Butker, ranked kicker 9. Do with that information what you will. Let's talk about the Broncos.
He's a fine kicker. I'd cook dinner for him anytime.
There it is.
I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do it. I just wanted to make the reference. Uh-huh.
Someone had to. Yeah, I wasn't going to do it. All right. let's talk about the Broncos. I think that there is a lot of interesting things here in Denver. A lot of interesting things. Let's start with, you know what? Let's start with the man himself. Let's start with Bo Nix. Bo Nix, sitting on my end, QB8, coming off of a rookie season that a lot of people did not see coming. Most people, after his bounce-around journeyman career in college, going from Auburn being labeled the next great Auburn Tiger to fizzling out to going to Oregon to making a little bit of a run there, not being that flashy. To going to the NFL, being drafted by the Broncos in what a lot of people considered to be a reach, and hooking up with Jim Harbaugh and showing flashes of a really talented young quarterback in an offense that a lot of people thought and were right in saying it would be extremely run heavy. Bo Nix, I think a lot of people are ignoring how much of a game manager he is, but I think game manager is a term that is thrown around by people who don't know what a game manager is. A game manager is a quarterback who does what the game plan and the scheme demands of him and doesn't try to push and do more than needed, and does exactly what he's supposed to. Tom Brady is the classic game manager. I think there's something to be said about a comparison there. Aaron Rodgers. People don't think of him as a game manager, but in terms of all of the things that a game manager does in his prime, Aaron Rodgers was about as good of a game manager as anybody else was. He didn't turn the ball over. He didn't make mistakes. He did exactly what the game plan called for him to do. Bo Nix, I see a little bit of a young Tom Brady here. And I hate Tom Brady, but I like Bo Nix's skill set. And I like for him to take a next step. I'm targeting him in a lot of my drafts, mostly because I'm just not willing to spend the capital to get a better quarterback earlier on. He just kind of falls into that pocket for me. But that doesn't mean that I don't believe in him. I do believe that there is a really interesting way forward and upward for him. Stu, how do you feel about Bo Nix?
Yeah, and before I get too deep into it, just as one clarifying bit, it's not Jim Harbaugh that he's coached by.
Sorry, Sean Payton. Sean Payton.
You're good. It's not like that deep, but I think what a lot of people are. Hold on a second.
This is the second week. Well, I guess second week in the last 3 weeks that I've messed up something about Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah. Just wait till we get to the Chargers next episode.
Yeah, that's Pete Carroll coaching the Chargers now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Uh huh. Oh, gum chewing 74-year-old Pete Carroll.
Sorry.
Anyway, so Bo Nix. A lot of what I think people forget about Bo Nix, and I really think he should be drafted a little bit higher in 2025, is that, I mean, he was completely lost the first month or so of the season, and that's not to be denied, but going from weeks 5 to 17, he's on a points-per-game basis with guys like Jalen Hurts. He is performing like a fantasy upper echelon quarterback one, and that is not being baked into his ADP. I think people think that he's going to be good, but I don't think they're really selling exactly how good he could be. There's a couple things working against him, you know, the second year woes of quarterbacks a la CJ Stroud. The possibility is always there now that there's tape on him. Maybe they play him a little bit better. Maybe because they have such a good defense that they don't have to score a whole lot. Who knows? But Bo Nix is absolutely somebody that you should be looking at very closely in drafts. And as a result, start looking at the guys that he's working with as well. But for just quarterbacks alone, Bo Nix, he's definitely going to be a startable asset every single week. He's going to be, you know, sniffing the top half of quarterback ones, as you were talking about earlier with Patrick Mahomes. And I don't think you'll be sorry. I don't think you'll be sorry targeting him in drafts. I think he's got, you know, what it is to be an NFL quarterback and a productive fantasy asset for us, really. But talking about the guys that he's working with, and I'm excited to talk about Courtland Sutton. James, I want to know what you think about Courtland Sutton and why you're not so high on him.
We were having this conversation before recording this episode. Last year, Courtland Sutton, the wide receiver 15, in a season when wide receiver play across the board was a little bit down. He had his best work in the second half of the season, which seems to be the case with a lot of guys here that we're talking about. But Courtland Sutton is 29 years old. And it feels like since he entered the league, every year was looking like the year that he would break out to be a wide receiver one comfortably. Or at least a top-end wide receiver two. And we've seen it sort of happen, but we've also seen a lot of inconsistency. We've seen a lot of play dependent on a revolving door of quarterbacks. And at this point, it's almost time for Courtland Sutton to... I don't know that he seems like he's close to retirement. I think just based on where he's at currently, he's going to go for a while. I just have never been excited about Courtland Sutton. Not because he has a bad skill set, not because he is not clearly the top wide receiver in his stable. He is. Just, I've never seen anything to suggest that Courtland Sutton is in that conversation with other similar wide receivers being taken in that area. And I cannot convince myself to take him over a guy like Devontae Smith, or a guy like DK Metcalf, or even someone who's a rookie with a high ceiling, like Tet McMillan, I'm more excited about than Courtland Sutton. Again, maybe it's not for logical reasons. Maybe it's just a gut thing. I'm just not excited about Courtland Sutton. And we know that in the third round this year, the Broncos brought in Pat Bryant from Illinois, taken with the 74th pick in the draft. Not that that should be something Courtland Sutton should be fearing, but he's getting up there in age. He hasn't really shown it yet. He's shown flashes of it. I'm just not excited. and I really haven't ever been. Stu, why am I wrong?
Look, I gut instinct and feelings are a huge part of our game, and you really gotta try to tamper that down as best as you can. You could go through your entire draft, pick every single player that people are like, ugh, you picked Chuba Hubbard, ugh, you picked Cortland Sutton, ugh, you picked Rashad White. You could build a full fantasy roster on players that people are just not super excited about, and that is totally fine. You will have a good roster. You will be competitive. The thing about Cortland Sutton is that he doesn't need to be the flashiest on-field wide receiver to be fantasy relevant. I mean, DK Metcalf, Tet McMillan, Devontae Smith, I would take him easily over all three of those, and I would take that to the bank. Like, Tet McMillan is probably the highest of those that I like a lot, but that's just because it's a rookie and he's a new guy and I'm really excited about it. See, it's the gut. Cortland Sutton feels like the safest wide receiver two that you can grab. Even if he doesn't have the highest ceiling, he's unquestioned the number one in his offense. I don't think a third rounder is going to be competing with him anytime soon. Maybe people like Vele or Marvin Mims take a step forward since they're super young guys. But even then, like Evan Ingram is there now. Even then, Cortland Sutton's going to be ticketed for 135 targets. And a lot of these are going to be high-value targets in an offense that should be even improved over what it was last year. So I'm slamming the button on Cortland Sutton if he falls to me. It doesn't happen a lot in my mocks just from where I'm primarily drafting, but you could take him and feel secure in a way that I don't think you can feel secure for a lot of other targets. Like people going just above him. I mean, we talked about DJ Moore last time. He's kind of exciting, but people like Mike Evans, getting a little bit older. Terry McLaurin doesn't have a contract. Marvin Harrison Jr. was a big stinker last year. Devontae Adams is getting a little bit older as well. There's significant question marks for the guys above him. If you're a risk-averse sort of person and you think that you'd rather not lose your league in the draft, you'd rather win it over the waivers and over the course of the season, I think Cortland Sutton is a great target. I really do. Anyway.
Well said.
Thankfully, there's no other wide receivers that we really have to talk about. Mims is supposed to be their wide receiver, too. He's speedy, as all get out, but he's going to have to show me something before he's ever drafted. And then Evan Ingram. Let's talk about Evan Ingram next, I would say, to finish out the pass catchers. He was ousted from New York. He's gone from Jacksonville. It feels like people are just drafting him because he's a tight end, James. How do you think he's going to perform in a new offense in Denver?
Yeah, Evan Ingram, I'm seeing him as a tight end 7. That seems extremely high to me. We are several years removed from a moment where Evan Ingram was really, you know, relevant for anything other than the fact that he was there. I'm seeing a lot of people say, like, just his ability in a wide receiver depleted position or a wide receiver depleted location is something that should get people excited about him. I think that ignores a lot of other things. It ignores scheme. It ignores injury history. And this is something that we as a fantasy football and football community ignore a lot. Injury history, it is part of ability. If you can't be on the field, then it should be baked into how you are viewed as a fantasy football asset. And if Evan Ingram is, we're probably going to miss a couple games this year, maybe more, maybe less, that is something you need to consider. Also, he's been around for a while. He's 30 years old now, and he's a little bit of a different style of player than those other guys who we talked about why they were able to play a little bit longer. And we talked about this on the show before. You don't become less prone to injuries over age. Evan Ingram as a tight end 7 is not attractive to me. I think I would rather have a David Njoku. I think I would rather have Mark Andrews. There are other guys who we've talked about that I would rather have. there are guys who are going to go undrafted that I would rather have over Evan Engram. If we get through six quarterbacks and the top guy on my list left is Evan Engram, I'm not taking one. Well, not that I'm not taking one, but I'm going to wait until later rounds. Not an indictment on him, just I guess an indictment of the state of the tight end position in fantasy football as it is right now. Stu, thoughts?
All right. I don't have much on Evan Engram. It's a gross draft pick, but in a different way than Cortland Sutton, I guess. Like, ugh, you took Evan Engram, but really, ugh, you took Evan Engram.
You spent capital on Evan Engram.
Does that undercut exactly everything that I said about Cortland Sutton? Maybe.
No, not at all.
Okay, well, thank God, because I'm not drafting Evan Engram. I don't think a lot of people should at the current price that he's going. Just wait and stream tight ends at that point. Like, you missed out on Travis Kelce. Don't panic because you're like, oh my God, all the good guys are taken. Don't just take the next guy off the top. Let somebody else do that. Be patient. Wait till the very end of your draft. It's gonna mean you got a stiff spine. You got to wait. Take somebody at the very, very end, because Evan Engram at that price is not it. Running backs, James. Running backs. It was the R.J. Harvey show for a little bit there. We thought that he was going to be it, basically. So that's rookie running back R.J. Harvey. Went in the first round. No, second round. Sorry. Second round. But went higher than really the draft experts were thinking that he would, which meant Sean Payton wanted this guy. He said, this is my guy. Let's go get him. That was really exciting for all of us fantasy owners for a little while. But now they've signed J.K. Dobbins, a guy who I really thought was going to go back to the Chargers. But now they let him go to a divisional rival. I think that says a lot about J.K. Dobbins in the season that he had, because he came on strong. He had some 200-yard games, but they were good games to start off the season. And then his efficiency really waned over the back half of the season. Was that wear and tear on him? Maybe. I mean, his attempts were not overly high. It's not like he was Saquon Barkley, but his efficiency went down all the same. And now he's coming in to muddle this backfield. Who's going to be the first guy trotting out there? Because it's probably going to be J.K. Dobbins, but really, should it be? Should it be R.J. Harvey? Anyway, I digress. But J.K. Dobbins is going super late in drafts. You could very well take a flyer on him at the very end of drafts and get maybe the first three, four games out of him in good standing. But Harvey's going to be the one that you want to own in this backfield, and he's reflecting that in his ADP. He's going in like the fifth or sixth round in standard. He's going at RB21. So it's definitely going to still be his backfield over the course of the season, or at least he's projected to be that way. It's just not going to be the way that it shakes out early. So if you take R.J. Harvey as your RB2, you better have something else in the early parts of the season, maybe like a Jerome Ford, someone that you can start for a few weeks and see how Harvey shakes out in the backfield. James, round us out with these running backs. It's kind of an interesting situation, kind of a gross situation, and you get to talk about Audric Estime, who you love.
I do love Audric Estime. Maybe not so much for fantasy football. I just love him as a football player. But I think that this is a really interesting backfield, because I think that people aren't looking at it the way that it probably should be used. And that's as, honestly, a really efficient committee. J.K. Dobbins, I think at the start of the season, will be the, not every down guy, but he's going to get more volume early in the season than he does as it goes along, as R.J. Harvey becomes more implemented into the system. But I think R.J. Harvey will have a week one role, and it may end up being bigger than we think. It may not. But as we, you know, getting into the bye week part of the season, getting into weeks four, five, six, R.J. Harvey will start to get a little bit of the lion's share of that split. But J.K. Dobbins and R.J. Harvey are different types of running backs. J.K. Dobbins, when he's healthy, but as you said, wear and tear, that's the name of his two knees, J.K. Dobbins is going to need load management, and R.J. Harvey is there to help with that. Not that he's going to take over entirely, not that he's not going to have a meaningful role entirely, but there are other running backs in this system that are probably worthy of getting touches. I know that the fantasy football world is sick of hearing the name Jaleel McLaughlin. Can he go away now, please? He's still there. And Audric Estime is very much a bowling ball power back. There's a place for that, too. This system is one that a lot of people want to be RJ Harvey's show, and it's just not going to be that. A lot of other people would want it very badly to be J.K. Dobbins' show, or maybe they want J.K. Dobbins to be like the passing down back. I don't think it's going to be that either. I think this is going to be a well-oiled committee backfield, as we've seen other teams in the NFL use. And I think depending on the efficiency of the overall Broncos offense this year, that could either be a very good thing for both of those top two guys, both RJ Harvey and J.K. Dobbins, or it could be a very bad thing for both of them. And I think it's just going to depend on your belief in not just those players, but this entire offense. So this is on not Jim Harbaugh, this is on Sean Payton. Sean Payton, I know you're not Jim Harbaugh. I know what team you coach for. I'm sorry I said that earlier. did that make sense? That all,
yeah, made perfect sense.
All the people
sense.
In the class listening, did that make sense to you? Stu, you're not
it
my
made
class. I'm talking to my imaginary fantasy football class sitting over in the corner. But I made it weird. Okay. Broncos defense. Sorry, did you have more to go
No, I really didn't. You were pushing it to me, and then you pushed it to imaginary people, and I was like, all right, let's go. Speak up if you can hear us.
We're having a good time.
The defense, one of the top in the league. Again, like I talked about before, does that mean the offense doesn't have to do very much? Is that not good for fantasy? You can decide, dear listener. But they do have a kicker as well.
Big Nuts Lutz.
Big Nuts Lutz. 31 years young. Probably not super wide receiver, super fantasy relevant.
Still kicking,
though.
I think that this is a good time to talk about something. I know we're going a little bit long here, but the Broncos, in looking at their players, where those players fit in the draft and how they fit in, this is a great opportunity to tell all of you listeners that you need to mock. You need to mock draft so that you can learn about the intricacies of how a draft plays out. And when you mock draft, look at the entire board. Don't look at the lists. Look at the board of who is going when. Because really, when it boils down to it, fantasy football isn't about building your team based on the players you like. It is about building your team based on the chess game that is happening between 8 to 14 other owners who have the same pool. And the strategy of who you take when and why matters a lot. And really, the only way you're going to learn that is by mock drafting. So please, please, please get out there and make yourself better by getting your reps in and have a plan going into draft day. That's my soapbox.
Have a plan and get ready for that plan to immediately be thrown out the door, because it could very well happen.
But have a plan for when that plan gets screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember last season I had a whole plan. I mocked that plan probably 40, 50, 60 times. I was so sure the person above me was taking Breece Hall, and they did not. They took Bijan, and I wanted Bijan so bad. So bad. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. James, it is last call again. Last call, part two. I'm still drinking the same stuff. It's the Molson Canadian Lager. It's still generic. It's still fine. What are you drinking now? Is it anything different than last episode?
So I just, as you were talking, finished my beer from the last episode. And I am ready for my next one. This is from Energy City Brewing in It's unclear if they're in Batavia, Illinois, or Itasca, Illinois. But I saw this on the shelf today, and I was just so intrigued. I couldn't not. I don't know if it sounds good, but this is the Energy City Brewing Batisserie Mint Chocolate Chip Flavored Imperial Stout. It is 10% ABV, and I like stouts. Stu, I know you like stouts.
Sure do.
I don't know what to expect from this. When it says flavored Imperial Stout, that makes me think that this is something that like flavors were added later in the brewing process than like something that would give you natural minty flavors, which there are strains of yeast that do that. I'm just very curious. Very, very curious. Stu, you said you were drinking the same thing that you were last episode. What is that?
Sorry, you like really cut out there. I don't know if you were talking, if you asked me a question.
Sorry.
It's been happening a little bit, but you haven't asked me direct questions, and it hasn't happened during a direct question. I'm sorry.
Good. Sorry. I asked, you said you were drinking the same thing that you were last episode. What is that?
Yeah, it's the Molson Canadian lager. You cut out again. I'm sorry, dude. It's like the last couple seconds of what you're saying.
Sorry. All right.
It's okay. I also said already it's the Molson. I thought I said that.
You probably already, did. So. I just got too interested in this weird stout. And I'll edit all of this later to make it sound like it makes a lot more sense.
It'll probably be a clean break because we probably just slice off when you pushed it to me. So rather than pushing it to me, you could just be like, and that's it.
Yeah. And let's go. Well, I guess I'm the only one cracking a beer here. And I'll let you all hear that in 3, 2, 1. Oh, yeah. I want to see what this pour looks like, because I have no idea. Well, I know what a stout looks like. It's going to be, like, black, so that's good. But
I hope it's like, actually green, like mint chocolate chip.
It's not. The label is a nice minty green, though. That's fun. Stu, how about you give us your final thoughts for the evening?
Yeah, my final thoughts are I want to hear your thoughts. Reach out to us on our socials on X, Instagram, at Fantasy Footbeer. Like, comment, subscribe, I don't know, whatever you do on those platforms. Talk with us, share how you feel about the Chiefs and the Broncos. Tell us why you love Cortland Sutton as a safe wide receiver too. If you like beer and you want us to drink something as wacky as mint chocolate chip stouts, reach out to us on Gmail at fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com as well. We take beer requests or anything really else there. So would look forward to and would love to drink what you guys like to drink and learn about you guys out there. So let us know. Reach out to us. James, close us off for the evening.
And I just took a drink of that beer and like to start, it tastes like any stout. And then you very clearly get like thin mint and it's great. And then a really weird, like, irony aftertaste. I don't know. But anyway, everybody, thanks for listening to another episode of Fantasy Footbeer. We thank you for sticking with us. There's a lot of fantasy football podcasts out there. We are glad that you chose ours. So for all of us here at Fantasy Footbeer, for Dr. Michael Stewart, for my dog Indy, who's sleeping behind me, I'm James Kemp. Good night. Good talk.